I can think of no better place for this center of diplomacy than here in orbit around the neutral planet. What are your thoughts on this momentous occasion, your neutralness?
I have no strong feelings one way or the other.
Welcome to the Wind Machine Podcast, not your average Eurovision podcast. My name's Danny Tregoning, and today I'm joined by the raclette cheese to my cheese fondue, Mark Perkins.
G'day, Danny. G'day, Eurovision fans.
We went double cheese with that intro.
Ooh, like double cheese.
Cheesy goodness. This is episode 41.
And we've been at it. For 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years straight. God, I'm exhausted.
Yes, we are that obsessed with Eurovision.
I never thought that season one would go this long.
Well, it's got a little bit more to go.
It has got a little bit more to go. How many have we got left?
Well, after today's, we've got another 6 countries to do.
Wow. Mm. It's kind of flown by really, though, hasn't it?
It has.
It has. Wow. Now, I need you to explain what that intro was about.
Well, for those of you who may not have picked that up, it was from an episode of Futurama.
Right.
There's a group called the Neutrals, or the Neutral Planet.
Right.
And they are basically, they can't make up their mind whether they're for something or against something. Now, we thought this was appropriate for Switzerland because Switzerland's always known stereotypically as the neutral country.
That's right. You know, if you've got people that are fighting, you always say so-and-so Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, listeners, winter has hit hard. I'm feeling a little bit nasally. You've got a cold.
I've got a cold.
So you've got the Lemsip happening. But yep. We will soldier on.
Soldier on with Codrill.
Soldier on with Lemsip.
That doesn't quite work.
Soldier on. Anyway, if you haven't figured out already, last episode we picked Switzerland out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom, and we're focusing on our favourites based on a jury of two.
We have
Swim Against the Stream.
Why Buffy Was Always Busy.
One of the robbed songs from 2018.
Mm, everyone knows what that one is. I'll Follow You Anywhere, Apollo.
And you know we love a good whistling song.
Oh, we do, don't we?
So, let's begin.
The Swiss Confederation is a sovereign state in Europe. Switzerland is situated in western central Europe and is bordered by Italy to the south, France to the west, Germany to the north, and Austrian Liechtenstein to the east. Switzerland is a landlocked country geographically divided between the Alps, the Swiss Plateau, and the Jura, spanning a total area of almost 42,000 square kilometres. As we always joke, Fleur, the capital is Bern. The country has a history of armed neutrality going back to the Reformation. It has not been in a state of war internationally since 1815 and did not join the United Nations until 2002. Nevertheless, it pursues an active foreign policy and is frequently involved in peace-building processes around the world. In addition to being the birthplace of the Red Cross, hence the flag we'll get into in a second,
yes,
Switzerland is home to numerous international organisations, including the second largest UN office. On the European level, it is a founding member of the European Free Trade Association, but notably not part of the European Union, the European Economic Area, or the Eurozone. However, it participates in the Schengen area and the European single market through bilateral treaties. Switzerland is one of the most developed countries in the world, with the highest nominal wealth per adult and the 8th highest per capita gross domestic product. Switzerland ranks at or near the top globally in several metrics of national performance, including government transparency, civil liberties, quality of life, economic competitiveness, and human development. Zurich and Geneva have each been ranked among the top cities in the world in terms of quality of life, with the former ranked second globally.
The flag of Switzerland consists of a red flag with a white cross in the centre. It is only one of two square sovereign state flags, the other being the flag of Vatican City. The dimensions of the cross were formally established only in 1889. Quote, "The coat of arms of the Federation is within a red field an upright white cross. Those four arms of equal length are one and six times as long as they are wide." End quote. Sounds quite deep, doesn't it?
Mm.
The use of the white cross as a military ensign attached to the Canton's flag as form of the strips of linen has been used in the old Swiss Confederacy since the 14th century. But the modern design of a white cross suspended in a square field of red was introduced only during the Napoleonic period. First used in 1800 and was introduced as the national flag in 1889.
Switzerland has four official languages, mainly German, spoken by 63%, French 23% in the west, and Italian 8% in the south. The fourth official language, Romanish, at 0.5%, is a Romance language spoken locally in the southeastern trilingual canton of Graubünden and is designated by Article 4 of the Federal Constitution as a national language along with German, French and Italian, and in Article 70 as an official language if the authorities communicate with persons who speak Romanish. However, federal laws and other official acts do not need to be decreed in Romanish. So it's a, you know, if we feel like it, language.
That's so Swiss.
Yeah. In 2013, the languages most spoken at home among permanent residents aged 15 and older were Swiss German at 60%, French 23%, Standard German 10% and Italian 8%. More than two-fifths of the permanent resident population indicated speaking more than one language regularly. Other languages spoken at home included English, Portuguese, Albanian, Serbian, Croatian, Spanish and Turkish. Learning one of the other national languages at school is compulsory for all Swiss pupils, so many Swiss are supposed to be at least bilingual, especially those belonging to linguistic minority groups.
It's been funny the last 2 weeks thinking about Switzerland in Eurovision. Mm. And I know that Switzerland is one of your countries because we all sort of have a country that we decide to, you know, go for that's got nothing to do with us, and Switzerland's one of yours. We had a lot of trouble getting down to five.
Because I liked pretty much most
you
of them.
You pretty much did, and we were stuck on six for a good couple of days. So unfortunately, the ones that missed out, you know, they might resurface in season two. You never know.
That's true.
Yes, season two is coming next year. Woohoo! Anyway, let's go to our first song. From 2012, here's Unbreakable by Sin Plus.
You can do anything you want. It doesn't matter how hard it is. You can do it. You can do it. So please don't. Don't stop, try your best. Don't stop. Don't stop moving. Today, without a doubt, a good vibe is in the crowd. You can do it, you can do it, you can do it. I'm breakable, I'm breakable.
Plus is an indie band made up of brothers Ivan Brogoni, born 1986, and Gabriel Brogoni, born 1982. They have toured around Europe and shared stages with international acts such as Roxette and Human League, among others. That's kind of cool. The band now shares their time between Berlin, Copenhagen, and Los Angeles. The song came 11th in the semi on 45 points. We've found, with looking at the clips for the five acts that we've picked, they've actually put a bit of effort into their official music videos.
The Swiss do go all out.
And this one is no different. We start with a building. There's a lot of red and green lights happening. Now, the duo of boys are found in a tunnel. There's a woman photocopying, and she seems to be plugged into the photocopier. Then she breaks free. Then there's more office workers who are all plugged in, and they break free. Even the cleaner breaks free. Then we have some random dancers, which I will never understand. Unfortunately, they don't keep with that whole kind of, you know, idea of breaking out of the mundane to the Eurovision stage, which is kind of sad. They could have done with maybe some people plugged into stuff. It's a bit Westworld, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've been watching too much Westworld. On the Eurovision stage, we have four members. So we've got Gabriel and Ivan, and they're joined by a drummer who is in the official clip, but I've got no information about him. He's just a random drummer, which is weird.
Oh, okay.
And a lady bassist, which is always nice to see. It's basically a blue background at the start, and then it changes red and green, so it kind of matches back to the official clip. And then we've got a heap of pyro. Yeah! This song only just didn't make the final, which, sadly, with some of Switzerland's songs, they've kind of been in that top echelon of not making it.
And this is why I chose the title for this episode, The Swiss Redemption, because they deserve, a lot of these songs, especially in this podcast, deserve, in my opinion, to have gone to the final.
Well, we will talk a little bit about voting blocks when we get to the actual Eurovision section. But yeah, I think Switzerland is hard done by.
And I was just thinking this, going back to the song, why did we choose this song?
You know that there's something about it, how he sings, "Swim against the stream, following your wildest dreams."
Yes, it was basically this chorus that got us over the line.
It's a pretty repetitive song.
That's true.
But it's got a really good beat to it, and his voice is quite weird.
Your wildest dreams.
Your wildest dreams. So, yeah, we found ourselves when, you know, because what we do, listeners, is as soon as we finish a podcast, I go downstairs and with the trusty iPhone, we go through all the CDs because that's how old fart we are.
I barely have time to stop recording the current episode before Danny's downstairs checking out the songs for the next episode. And that's not an exaggeration. That actually happens.
It does happen. So I race downstairs and I make a playlist of whatever years we've got of the country that we've just chosen. Now, as soon as I got to 2012, I went, oh, Unbreakable's in it. Yes. Swim against the stream, following your wildest dreams. Your wildest dreams. It's such an awesome song. Another awesome song, which kind of harks back to Ye Olde Eurovision, is
classic.
Our next one.
Yeah,
it's a classic.
I mentioned Buffy before. That was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yes, here's Vampires Are Alive by DJ Bobo from 2007.
And we will be forever young.
Peter René Baumann, born 1968, better known as DJ Bobo, is a Swiss singer-songwriter, dancer and music producer. He has sold 14 million records worldwide. In December 2006, the Swiss TV Council announced that they had chosen Bobo out of over 200 applicants to represent Switzerland in Helsinki. The council earned some negative comments for the selection as not having been fair towards lesser-known Swiss artists. In February of the next year, he revealed both the song and the video he would enter in the song contest. The song came 20th in the semi-final on 40 points. Ouch.
The funny thing was, when our lovely listeners realise what the next episode is about, we get messages, don't we? And it's always like, this has got to be in it. Yeah. This one's got to be in it. Funny thing is, DJ Bobo came up as one of the songs that had to be in it.
Oh, did it?
It did. Oh. And I was like, when we had a six, unfortunately, we had to get rid of lovely Rika, who's so beautiful and her song is great. Last of Our Kind is one of those great songs, but unfortunately bombed live.
Yeah.
When we had six, it was between Rika and this.
Yep.
And we decided this because it's old school Eurovision.
It's old school. And before you get into the describing what the official clip was, bear in mind this was immediately after Lordi won the previous year. So I guess the clip and the stage as well had a bit of Lordi inspiration, shall we say.
Yes, it was dramatic. Uh-huh. It was dramatic. Now, Joss Whedon. Sometimes you got to put your teeth in to say his name because you always want to naturally just say Josh and it's Joss.
Joss.
He'd love this film clip.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it is amazing. It's basically Twilight before Twilight was even conceived. God, could you imagine a world without Twilight? It would be great. Sorry, I couldn't stand it. We've got vampires and trees. Then it kind of gets a little bit like Backstreet Boys and we've got lots of dancers everywhere. And then we end up with a massive party of vampires.
Hmm. Yeah.
And DJ Bobo's got some pretty good fangs.
He does, yes.
You know, because we've watched a few kind of shows about vampires in our time because, of course, you know, we loved Buffy and we loved Angel and we also loved True Blood. And the thing is,
True Blood first four seasons.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah, it kind of fell apart in the end, but we still watched it because we're completists. I always found the positioning of the fangs to be problematic because it's always like which tooth is going to go.
Yep.
Because we were so used to Buffy. Then when we started watching True Blood, it was like, oh, they're in the wrong spot. And I can see you feeling your teeth at the moment because you're quite impressed by your K90 fangs that you've got. They're very cute.
Yeah.
Now, when we get to the stage, you know how we have that wonderful thing about you can only have six people on stage? They've gotten around this with some mannequins. So even before Romania with the humans decided to drag out some mannequins and put them on the stage, DJ Bobo decided to do it in 2007.
Very clever.
Now, there's a lady that sings with him, but I've got no information on her
really?
At all.
She was really good.
She was really good. And so DJ Bobo is joined by her and four other dancers, and one of which sings a lot of the stuff, which is actually funny because I thought Bobo sang more, but then I realised, I was like, oh, it's the backup singer singing.
I had the same reaction when I was watching as well.
Interesting. And of course, we've got, you know, a little bit of, you know, vamp candelabra on the side, you know, just for something. But the costuming was quite amazing.
Yeah.
The stage setup was quite amazing. There's some really good kind of in sync dancing, which was very nice. And then the LEDs behind, we've got bats. And then we end with some pyro.
Of course.
Of course. But, you know, looking back at this, like, this is really classic Eurovision.
Yeah.
Like, it's before it got serious.
Yeah, like, if it was done this year, it would definitely be the troll song.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But, you know, think back in 2007. Yeah. That, you know, it was sort of a bit more, you could be a little bit silly if you wanted to be, or you could be trolly for a laugh, not trolly to be mean.
That's right.
But, you know, songs like this will always have a special place in our hearts because, you know, think about it. 2007, We had Verka.
We had Tipex.
We had the Tipex, which is still one of our favourites after all these years. So yeah, 2007 was a pretty good year.
Yeah. Mm. It was a very good year.
It was a very good year. Now, I'm looking at this history section, and we're going through a lot of years. This one's quite meaty.
Oh, it's meatier than Malta, but not as meaty as a lot of others.
So it's not as meaty as, say, the UK.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, thank goodness. All right, well, let's get going. The earliest known cultural tribes of the area were members of the Hallstatt and Luterne cultures. The Luterne culture developed and flourished during the late Iron Age from around 450 BC. One of the most important tribal groups of the Swiss region was the Helvetii. Almost sounds like a font.
I think that's probably where it came from.
It probably did. Steadily harassed by the Germanic tribes, in 58 BC, the Helvetii decided to abandon the Swiss plateau and migrate to Western Gallia. But Julius Caesar's armies pursued and defeated them, forcing the tribe to move back to its original homeland. In 15 BC, Tiberius conquered the Alps, integrating them into the Roman Empire. The area occupied by the Helvetii, the namesakes of the later Confederatio Helvetica. Ah, there you go. They were the font. First became part of Rome's Gallia Bilicia province, and then its Germania Superior province, while the eastern portion of modern Switzerland was integrated into the Roman province of Raetia. The 1st and 2nd century AD was an age of prosperity for the population living on the Swiss plateau. In the early Middle Ages, from the end of the 4th century, the western extent of modern-day Switzerland was part of the territory of the kings of Burgundians. The Alemanni settled in the Swiss plateau in the 5th century and the valleys of the Alps in the 8th century, forming Alemannia. Modern-day Switzerland was therefore then divided between the kingdoms of Alemannia and Burgundy. The entire region became part of the expanding Frankish Empire in the 6th century, following Clovis I's victory over the Alemanni in 504, and then later Frankish domination of the Burgundians. Throughout the rest of the 6th and 7th and 8th centuries, the Swiss regions continued under Frankish hegemony. But after its extension under Charlemagne, the Frankish Empire was divided by the Treaty of Verdun. We've spoken about that before. The territories of present-day Switzerland became divided into Middle Francia and East Francia, while they were reunified under the Holy Roman Empire around 1000 AD. By 1200, the Swiss plateau comprised the dominions of the houses of Savoy, Salringer, Habsburg, and Kyburg. The old Swiss Confederacy was an alliance among the valley communities of the Central Alps. The Confederacy, governed by nobles and partisans of various cantons, facilitated management of common interests and ensured peace on the important mountain trade routes.
By 1353, the original cantons had joined with the cantons of Glarus and Zug and the Lucerne, Zurich and Bern city-states to form the old Confederacy of 8 states that existed until the end of the 15th century. The expansion led to increased power and wealth for the Confederation. By 1460, the Confederates controlled most of the territory south and west of the Rhine to the Alps and the Jura Mountains. It was not until more than 100 years after several internal wars within the Holy Roman Empire that in 1648, under the Peace of Westphalia, European countries recognized Switzerland's independence from the Holy Roman Empire and its neutrality. During the early modern period of Swiss history, the growing authoritarianism of the patriarch families, combined with a financial crisis in the wake of the 30 Years' War, led to the Swiss Peasant War of 1653. In the background to this struggle, the conflict between Catholic and Protestant cantons persisted, erupting in further violence. In 1798, the revolutionary French government conquered Switzerland and imposed a new unified constitution. This centralized the government of the country, effectively abolishing the cantons. The new regime, known as the Helvetic Republic, was highly unpopular. It had been imposed by a foreign invading army and destroyed centuries of tradition, making Switzerland nothing more than a French satellite state. When war broke out between France and its rivals, Russian and Austrian forces invaded Switzerland. The Swiss refused to fight alongside the French in the name of the Helvetic Republic. In 1803, Napoleon organized a meeting of the leading Swiss politicians from both sides in Paris. The result was the Act of Mediation, which largely restored Swiss autonomy and introduced a confederation of 19 cantons. Henceforth, much of Swiss politics would concern balancing a canton's tradition of self-rule with the need for a central government. In 1815, the Congress of Vienna fully re-established Swiss independence, and the European powers agreed to permanently recognise Swiss neutrality. The treaty allowed Switzerland to increase its territory with the admission of the cantons of Valais, Neuchâtel and Geneva. Switzerland's borders have not changed since, except for some minor adjustments. The restoration of power to the Patriarch was only temporary. After a period of unrest with repeated violent clashes, civil war broke out in 1847 when some Catholic cantons tried to set up a separate alliance. The war lasted for less than a month. However minor, the war compared to other European riots and wars in the 19th century had a major impact on both the psychology and the society of the Swiss and of Switzerland. The war convinced most Swiss of the need for unity and strength towards its European neighbours. Swiss people from all strata of society, whether Catholic or Protestant, from the liberal or conservative current, realised that the cantons would profit more if their economic and religious interests were merged. Thus, while the rest of Europe saw revolutionary uprisings, the Swiss drew up a constitution which provided for a federal layout, much of it inspired by the American example. This constitution provided for a central authority while leaving the cantons the right to self-government on local issues. This new constitution also brought a legal end to nobility in Switzerland. An important clause of the constitution was that it could be rewritten completely if this was deemed necessary, thus enabling it to evolve rather than being modified one amendment at a time. In 1891, the constitution was revised with unusually strong elements of direct democracy, which remain unique even today. Switzerland was not invaded during either of the world wars. Swiss neutrality was seriously questioned by the Grimm-Hoffmann affair in 1917, but it was short-lived. In 1920, Switzerland joined the League of Nations, which was based in Geneva, on condition that it was exempt from any military requirements.
Wind Machine Podcast. During World War II, detailed invasion plans were drawn up by the Germans, but Switzerland was never attacked. Switzerland was able to remain independent through a combination of military deterrence, concessions to Germany, and good fortune, as larger events during the war delayed an invasion. Under General Henri Gusin, Central Command, a general mobilisation of the armed forces was ordered. The Swiss military strategy was changed from one of static defence at the borders to protect the economic heartland to one of organised long-term attrition and withdrawal to strong, well-stockpiled positions high in the Alps, known as the Redoute. Switzerland was an important base for espionage by both sides in the conflict and often mediated communications between the Axis and Allied powers. Switzerland's trade was blockaded by both the Allies and the Axis. economic cooperation and extension of credit to the Third Reich varied according to the perceived likelihood of invasion and the availability of other trading partners. Concessions reached a peak after a crucial rail link through Vichy, France, was severed in 1942, leaving Switzerland surrounded, except for Liechtenstein. Over the course of the war, Switzerland interned over 300,000 refugees, and the International Red Cross, based in Geneva, played an important part during the conflict. Strict immigration and asylum policies, as well as the financial relationships with Nazi Germany, raised controversy. During the war, the Swiss Air Force engaged aircraft of both sides, shooting down 11 intruding Luftwaffe planes in May and in June 1940, then forcing down other intruders after a change of policy following the threats from Germany. You can't have it both ways, Switzerland. Over 100 Allied bombers and their crews were interned during the war. Between 1940 and 1945, Switzerland was bombed by the Allies, causing fatalities and property damage. Allied forces explained the bombings, which violated the 96th Article of War, resulting from navigational errors, equipment failure, weather conditions, and errors made by bomber pilots.
Sure.
The Swiss expressed fear and concern that the bombings were intended to put pressure on Switzerland to end the economic cooperation and neutrality with Nazi Germany.
I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
I'm pretty sure it was too.
Yeah.
Court-martial proceedings took place in England, and the US government paid 62 million in Swiss francs for reparations of the bombings. Oops. Switzerland was the last Western republic to grant women the right to vote. Interesting. Switzerland joined the Council of Europe in 1963, and in 1979, areas of the Canton of Bern attained independence from the Bernese, forming the new Canton of Jura. On the 18th of April 1999, the Swiss population and the cantons voted in favour of a completely revised federal constitution, which we'll talk a little bit of in politics. Now, Mark, I'm so sorry. I know you're sick and, you know, you're going through this like a trooper, but I'm going to have to tell you that I've at least found one Protestantism.
Yeah.
And I know you can do it. I know you can do it. I have faith in you.
Mikey, if you're listening, stop laughing now. Yeah, religion. Switzerland has no official state religion. Christianity is the predominant religion of Switzerland, divided between the Roman Catholic Church, the Swiss Reformed Church, further Protestant churches, and other Christian denominations. There has been a recent rise in evangelicalism, and immigration has established Islam and Eastern Orthodoxy as sizable minority religions. According to a 2015 poll by Gallup International, 12% of Swiss people self-identified as convinced atheists.
I wish, you know, how do you get convinced?
Do you put it in your Twitter profile and then shout it from the rooftop like a lot of atheists? I don't know.
Well, see, I could never be an atheist because I'm not convinced. That's why I'm agnostic.
Yeah,
see, I'm a bit Switzerland.
The country was historically about evenly balanced between Catholic and Protestant, with a complex patchwork of majorities over most of the country. Switzerland played an exceptional role during the Reformation as it became home to many reformers. Geneva converted to Protestantism.
Yes! Sorry, the crowd goes wild.
First time.
He did it.
In 1536, just before John Calvin arrived there. In 1541, he founded the Republic of Geneva on his own ideals. It became known internationally as the Protestant Rome. Zurich became another stronghold around the same time, and other centres included Basel, Bern, and St. Gallen. One canton was officially divided into Catholic and Protestant sections in 1597. The largest cities and their cantons used to be predominantly Protestant. Central Switzerland, the Valais, the Ticino, Appenzell Inhorides, it looks like hemorrhoids.
That's not hemorrhoids, no. I promise.
Okay. The Jura, the Fribourg are traditionally Catholic. The Swiss Constitution of 1848, under the recent impression of the clashes of Catholic versus Protestant cantons that culminated in the Soder Bundeskrieg, consciously defines a consociational state, allowing the peaceful coexistence of Catholics and Protestants. They could have used that in Ireland.
Yeah, it would have been nice.
Mm. A 1980 initiative calling for the complete separation of church and state was rejected by 79% of voters. Some traditionally Protestant cantons and cities nowadays have a slight Catholic majority, not because they are growing in members, quite the contrary, but only because since about 1970, a steadily growing minority became not affiliated with any church or religious body.
It's funny, after talk about war, yeah, talk about fighting over, you know, religion.
Yep.
We go to this next song.
Mm.
From this year, here's Stones by Zibs.
Wild Joker on a gold throne, blood diamond summer home. Wrong people with the right to know, but I can't do anything about it. All saying that life's hard, don't want it in a backyard. We should be further from the start, but I can't do anything about it. We're so afraid we're fire away. What's a life worth? We're so afraid, repeat the mistake. Is the enemy. It's been this way for centuries, and I can't do anything about it. Can't wait to light the cannonball. Can't face the mirror, says it all. Sins of the Father make us fall, and I can't do anything about it. We so afraid we fire.
Was founded in 2008 by siblings Corinne Geffer and Stefan Geffer. The name Zibs is a modification of the English word siblings. Coco was born in 1985 and she is the duo's lead vocalist. She trained at the Lane Theatre Arts in London. She's also recorded vocals for numerous artists and worked on radio jingles. Coco has also performed with Donna Summer, Prince, and was involved in the We Will Rock You 10th anniversary tour by Queen.
Ooh.
Stee, born in 1987, is the duo's drummer, keyboardist, and producer. From 2003 to 2007, he studied music. Outside of Zibs, he's also worked as a drummer and producer with a range of different artists. Since 2011, Coco and Stee have split their time between Switzerland and Los Angeles. Between 2011 and 2015, the band have had their own weekly reality TV show about their lives in Los Angeles and their road to success in the music industry on the Swiss television channel Joyz. We should try and find that.
Yeah.
Their first studio album, Ready, Go, was released in 2013 and peaked at number 14 on the official Swiss album charts. In 2017, their second album, It Takes a Village, was self-produced, peaking at number 11 on the official album charts. They have created songs used for commercials for Subaru, or if you're from New Zealand, Subaru, and wrote the official theme song for the 2012 Men's World Floorball, I am reading that right, Floorball Championships in Zurich. The song Stones came 13th in the semi-final on 86 points.
They were robbed.
Totally robbed.
If you have listened to our post-Eurovision wash-up, you know that I have been pretty devastated about this song not making the final.
Well, they made our top 10 in the pre-episode.
That's right.
And, but the thing was, dear listeners, I actually liked this song first.
Did you now?
It's true. It's true.
But I loved it more than you.
Okay, fair enough. I liked it first, but you like it more. All right, fair enough. No, it's a great song. The official clip, we're carrying on our tradition of serious official clips here for Switzerland. People are gearing up to fight. Coco and Stee are getting ready to perform. They're basically in a warehouse and there's lasers across the room. Someone has a Molotov cocktail. Then suddenly, all these masked faces start standing in a line in front of the band. They keep singing. They're ready to throw stuff. As they start to throw things, they actually explode in colour.
I think the, you know, those colour runs?
It's very much like a colour run. At the end of the song, the people take off their masks and they're Coco and Stee fighting each other.
Oh, my God.
It is full on. We always have that kind of internal fight, don't we? Like, you know, if you hang out with the wrong type of people, you end up becoming the wrong type of person, right?
Yep.
And I know that, I know myself and for you, we've probably said some really crappy things about other people in the past, and we probably still do under, you know, duress. But the thing is, right, you got to kind of face yourself and see that, look, we're not all perfect. So no point throwing stones, really.
Tell you what was perfect.
The actual Eurovision stage performance. I'm sorry, I have to take a moment. I'm going to have a cry. Okay. We've had a moment?
Yes.
Okay. Coco's gone full Aerosmith. Now, it's very rare that you see Coco without a hat.
Yeah.
She's a big hat person.
Yep.
We've got kind of a burgundy hat. It's a very Sir Hat hat, really.
But it's more wide-brimmed.
It's wide-brimmed more than a Sir Hat hat. So she sort of starts off. The funny thing is with the stage for Lisbon is that people use a lot of platforms. So we basically have her and Stee on a platform starting off and they're both together and they really are just in a field of light.
Yep.
Because that's it. So she starts singing and she kind of takes off with her mic stand and kind of drags it around for a bit. Then she goes up one of the stairs and then comes back. And then she leaves the stand behind, like she's like, screw this, I'm not going to deal with this anymore. Then she actually goes round the round section of the golden circle, which was very cool. And the first time I saw this, I didn't see her pick up the flare, but this time I did.
Yes.
She picks up the flare, and what does she say? Anyone who's ever been heard, put up your hands.
Yep.
So, of course, the crowd goes, yes.
Yes, the crowd responded very well to that.
Yeah, if there were crowd, as Stephen said the other night when we had him over for dinner, if there were a stadium vote,
yep,
a lot of songs would have gotten in differently.
Yes.
Yes. Because, yeah, she really brought it live.
Oh, my God. I was goosebumps, honestly.
So basically after the flare has run out, she just does this kind of mic drop and leaves it like, no, screw this, I'm done with this. Then at the end, she ends up standing on Steve's drum kit to sing the last section. And then, of course, with the she jumps down.
And Steve throws away the drumsticks.
Yep.
And they come together.
It's fantastic.
It was timed perfectly.
And honestly, I know we're going to sound incredibly biased, but I think that performance was so strong.
Oh, my God, it was strong.
And then coming 13th was just so sad because, you know, what happens after the Eurovision semifinals? They don't release the actual order of who came where and all that stuff until later. It doesn't sort of hinge people's votes and stuff like that. We were sure this was 11th, weren't we? We were like, it's got to be 11th. I can't believe it. It's got to be 11th. 13th.
The scores were pretty close around
They were very close.
But it's still, I just don't get it. And we'll get to it later in Switzerland and Eurovision, but there's definitely, there feels like there's a bias against Switzerland.
Or maybe people are just sick and tired of them sitting on the fence.
Maybe.
It does get tiring. You know, if you sit on the fence for too long, you do get splinters in your bottom. Yeah. You know, it's a bit too much.
I know I go on and on about Switzerland and I say it. Oh, it's one of my favourite songs each year. But this one absolutely outshines everything coming before it.
Now, I need you to save some of that passion because we have another one of your favourite songs coming up after this section.
I know.
So just, you know, just keep a little bit in reserve. Don't use too many spoons on zips because we still need to get through the next song.
Yeah.
But from Stones, this is like one of the best segues I've done ever.
I see what you've done here.
From Stones, we move to geography, climate and politics.
It should be geology. Stones, rock. Extending across the north and south side of the Alps in western central Europe, Switzerland encompasses a great diversity of landscapes and climates on a limited area of 42,000 square kilometres. It contains three basic topographical areas: the Swiss Alps to the south, the Swiss Plateau or Central Plateau, and the Jura Mountains on the west. The Alps are a high mountain range running across the central south of the country, comprising about 60% of the country's total area. The majority of the Swiss population live in the Swiss Plateau. Among the high valleys of the Swiss Alps, many glaciers are found, totaling an area of 1,000 square kilometres. From these originate the headwaters of several major rivers such as the Rhine, Inn, Ticino and Rhone, which flow in the four cardinal directions into the whole of Europe. The hydrographic network includes several of the largest bodies of freshwater in Central and Western Europe, among which are included Lake Geneva, Lake Constance, and Lake Maggiore. Switzerland has more than 1,500 lakes and contains 6% of Europe's stock of freshwater. Lakes and glaciers cover about 6% of the national territory. And I was watching one of those geographical, you know, what would happen YouTube videos a few weeks back about, you know, Switzerland. And it basically said Switzerland's probably the best country in the world to be in if there was ever another world war.
I thought you were going to talk about if there was an apocalypse. Well, I know you watch a lot of those. And I'm thinking, where is he going with this?
World War III apocalypse. Same diff. But because they've got the mountains and I'm sure there's probably some sort of, you know, black site thing inside some of the mountains.
Well, you think it's like Cheyenne Mountain?
Yeah.
From Stargate.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. And as I've just mentioned, there's a lot of resources there. A lot of fresh water.
Yes.
Places to hide.
Yes.
That sort of stuff.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. The Swiss climate is generally temperate, but can vary between the localities from glacial conditions on the mountaintops to often pleasant near the Mediterranean climate at Switzerland's southern tip. There are some valley areas in the southern part of Switzerland where some cold hardy palm trees are found. You wouldn't believe it. Summers tend to be warm and humid at times with periodic rainfall, so they are ideal for pastures and grazing. The less humid winters in the mountains may see long intervals of stable conditions for weeks, while the lower lands tend to suffer from inversion during these periods, thus seeing no sun for weeks. The weather phenomenon known as the Fjorn can occur at all times of the year and is characterized by an unexpectedly warm wind, bringing air of the very low relative humidity to the north of the Alps during the rainfall periods of southern face of the Alps. This works both ways across the Alps, but is more evident if blowing from the south due to the steeper step for oncoming wind from the south. The valleys running south to north trigger the best effect. From July to August, the daytime temperature range is 18 to 28. That's not bad. And from January to February, the range is minus 2 to 7. I don't mind that either. In spring and autumn, the daytime temperature ranges from 8 to 15 degrees.
The federal constitution adopted in 1848 is the legal foundation of the modern federal state. It is among the oldest constitutions in the world. A new constitution was adopted in 1999, as we briefly mentioned in history, but did not introduce notable changes to the federal structure. It outlines basic and political rights of individuals and citizen participation in public affairs, divides the powers between the Confederation and the cantons, and defines federal jurisdiction and authority. There are three main governing bodies on the federal level: the bicameral parliament, legislative, the federal council, executive, and the federal court, judicial. The Swiss Parliament consists of two houses, the Council of States, which has 46 representatives, two from each canton and one from each half canton, who are elected under a system determined by each canton, and the National Council, which consists of 200 members who are elected under a system of proportional representation, depending on the population of each canton. Members of both houses serve for 4 years and only serve as members of Parliament part-time. Well, our politicians basically work part-time.
Not, they're casual.
Yeah. When both houses are in joint session, they are known collectively as the Federal Assembly. Through referendums, citizens may challenge any law passed by Parliament and through initiatives, introduce amendments to the federal constitution, thus making Switzerland a direct democracy. The Federal Council constitutes the federal government, directs the federal administration, and serves as collective head of state. It is a collegial body of seven members elected to a four-year mandate by the Federal Assembly, which also exercises oversight over the Council. The President of the Confederation is elected by the Assembly from among the seven members. Traditionally, in rotation and for a one-year term, the President chairs the government and assumes representative functions. However, the President is a primus inter pares with no additional powers and remains the head of a department within the administration.
The Swiss Armed Forces, including the Land Forces and Air Forces, because of course we don't have a navy, are comprised mostly of conscripts, male citizens aged from 20 to 34, and in some special cases up to 50. Being a landlocked country, Switzerland has no navy, really. However, on lakes bordering neighbouring countries, armed military patrol boats are used. Swiss citizens are prohibited from serving in foreign armies, except for the Swiss Guards of the Vatican, or if they are dual citizens of a foreign country and reside there. The structure of the Swiss militia system stipulates that soldiers keep their army-issued equipment, including all personal weapons, at home. Some organisations and political parties find this practice controversial, but mainstream Swiss opinion is in favour of the system. Compulsory military service concerns all male Swiss citizens. Women can serve voluntarily. Men usually receive military conscription orders for training at the age of 18. About two-thirds of young Swiss are found suited for service. For those found unsuited, various forms of alternative service exist. Annually, approximately 20,000 persons are trained in recruitment centres for the duration from 18 to 21 weeks. Because of its neutrality policy, the Swiss Army does not take part in armed conflicts in other countries, but does take part in some peacekeeping missions around the world. And then, of course, as I was reading that, I went, Swiss Army knife! We haven't brought that up yet, but now we have. I love a Swiss Army knife. You've got one downstairs. It's got everything on it.
Yeah.
The only thing is...
Yes.
It hasn't got a key for the place in the final for this next song. I'm sorry.
No.
I'm sorry.
Interesting segue. Yes, this is another of my favourites from last year. Here's Apollo by Time Bell.
Like a bullet in my chest, you're written, bound, and etched forever in my mind. We are fading in our hands, lost somewhere in wasteland, not knowing up from down. But when the walls are caving and the world keeps turning, we got the love, we got to love. No, I will never let you go. Other words will make me fold. It is never easy. I'll follow you, Apollo. No, I will never let you go. You do the same for me when autumn comes around. So when the walls are caving and the world keeps turning, we got the love, we got to love. No, I will never let you go. Other words will make me fold. It is never easy. I'll follow you.
Time Bell is a Swiss band from Bern, currently consisting of lead vocalist Miruna Manescu from Romania, who was born in 1989, drummer Samuel Forster from Switzerland, and multi-instrumentalist Emmanuel Daniel Adrescu, also from Romania. The band was formed as a five-member boy band while its members were students at the University of Bern. Shortly after, Miruna was added to the group as a lead singer by their Romanian producer. The name of the band is derived from the Zeitlog, which is one of the main sites of Bern. Of course. While the band was formed in and is based in Switzerland, its members have hailed, of course, from Romania, Hungary and Serbia in addition to Switzerland. Time Bell previously attempted to represent Switzerland in the Eurovision Song Contest 2015 with the song Singing About Love, but failed, placing second in the Swiss national final. Apollo came 12th in the semi on 97 points.
So close.
So close, and robbed yet again.
Oh.
Look, at the time, a lot of opinion was that the actual live version was a bit weak, and at the time I felt that as well. But rewatching it today, I felt it wasn't too bad, actually.
I thought she was pretty good.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And, of course, I love the CD version.
Oh, of course you do. I know you love the CD version. And this is what we do, listeners. We always listen to the CD version. And sometimes we get interesting surprises when we watch the live version if we've forgotten it.
Yeah.
The official clip, this one's quite deep, actually. We've got kind of elderly people sitting alone and standing alone and looking at photos and stuff, and it's quite sad. And then the band arrives and they're all kind of dressed in formal gear, and then suddenly they let in a heap of leaves. Like, geez, come on. But anyway, they let in a heap of leaves, and then everyone springs to life and they all start dancing. It's nice. They bring happiness.
Yes.
You know, they bring something nice to people. That's what we need. You know, it's quite a really lovely clip because, of course, you know, our poor elderly folks that, you know, probably alone. And
maybe Time Bell are doing a tour of retirement homes, perhaps.
I think they should.
Yeah.
I think they should. We don't get any of that in the Eurovision stage version, though. It's a bit weird. I know a lot of people made comments about the yellow dress looking a little bit like Big Bird. I actually don't mind it. Now that I've had some space from it, I've looked at it and gone, she can carry off yellow. I'm jealous. I can't carry off yellow. No. I'm no good at yellow at all. It washes me out. But the whole stage is yellow, pink and purple. So we've got the boys on drums and piano, and both of those have got like a pinkly, purpley theme to them. The piano's pinky purple and
it's very standard. It's very pastel colours.
Very pastel colours. Mm. Now, Miruna is actually on a yellow set of steps with a yellow dress and a yellow mic stand. So it is probably a little too much yellow. She kind of blends in with the steps. And, of course, there's that moment when she decides to walk down the steps. And every time I've watched it, my heart is in my mouth, even though I know she's not going to fall. I'm just like... But she makes it. And look, seriously, this is still a good song. Mm. And I think the live performance was still fine.
You know, like, she had great chemistry with the camera.
Absolutely.
There was one camera direction that didn't work.
That could have been...
It wasn't their fault.
No, it could have been either... Well, you know how they do everything mechanically now.
Yeah.
So it's not mechanically. By... computer, and we know that computers can fail. I think that's what happened. But it was an interesting kind of shot where she just wasn't in the shot at all.
Well, like half her head was, and then they go, oh, quick.
Yeah, whoops.
And then go to another shot. Yeah.
Pan. But look, I know this is still one of your favourites. Yeah. I still really like it. But
it was my favourite until this year, until Zibs came along.
No.
So I guess it's still my second favourite now.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So since...
This is a podcast about Switzerland in Eurovision.
Is it?
Danny,
yes.
Take it away.
Switzerland has participated in the Eurovision Song Contest 59 times since making its debut in the contest in 1956, missing only four contests in 1995, 99, 2001 and 2003. Switzerland hosted the first contest in 1956 in Lugano and won it. Switzerland then won its second contest in 1988, with the 1989 contest being held in Lausanne. Liz Assia, who unfortunately passed away recently, won the first contest in 1956 with the song Refrain. She returned to play second in 1958. Switzerland would go on to finish second in 1963, 1986, third in 1961, 1982, before winning the contest for a second time in 1988 with some bird from Canada called Celine Dion. You know, she never amounted to anything.
No, I never heard of her again.
Like, she never appeared again, and I've got no idea, you know. You're here, there's nothing to fear. My heart will go on.
Mm.
Sorry. I'm starting to sink. Switzerland also came third in 1983, giving the country its 15th top five result. The 21st century has not been as kind, with the top 10 in 2005 and 13th in 2014. Since the introduction of the semi-final round in 2004, Switzerland has failed to reach the final 11 times. Yikes. As Switzerland has four official languages, French, German, Italian, and Romanish, for decades the song requirement stated that the song had to be performed in a national language, which gave Switzerland leeway as they could perform in any of those four languages. Out of the 58 or 59 appearances in the contest, Switzerland has sent 52 songs, 24 of which were in French, 12 were in German, 12 were in English, 9 were in Italian, and 1 was in Romanish. Both of Switzerland's winning songs have been sung in French. Funny that. Since 2000, though, Switzerland has performed in English 13 times. French twice and Italian twice. Switzerland usually give their top points to the UK, France, Sweden and Ireland, while they receive their most points from the UK, Netherlands, Austria and Finland. That's a very strange block they have there.
They keep reaching for those stars, don't they?
They really do. They really keep reaching for those stars.
Which brings us to our final song for this episode. From 2014, here's Sepultura with Hunter of Stars.
Looking for a candidate, you have an option, only one choice. Sipping my drink, looking around, there is so much beauty, yes we can. Confidence is a fragile concept that often fades away in the night. There he comes, that I want to guess. There's no place for you tonight. Want me to go, want me to go. Cause I think I'm lying, cause I think I'm lying. No, open the door. Cause tonight I cannot go hunting for stars, no, no. Twisting the truth and leaving us alone in this mad and moody world, society without love and a state. My heart has been well trained. I am gonna be your candidate. I am the hunter, you are the prey. Tonight I'm gonna eat you up. Want me to go? Want me to go? Cause I think I'm lying, cause I think I'm lying. No, open the door. Cause tonight I cannot go hunting for stars. It's raining outside, it's raining outside. I would like to storm in. I roar like a lion, I roar like a lion. I fear your judgment, I fear your judgment. I am so wet, I'm dirty. I fear your judgment, I fear your judgment. It's me and my imperfection.
going to go. Cause you think I'm lying, cause you think I'm lying, no. Open the door. Cause tonight I cannot go hunting for stars, no, no. Want me to go. Cause you think I'm lying, cause you think I'm lying, no. Open the door. Cause tonight I cannot go hunting for stars, no, no. Want me to go. Cause you think I'm lying, cause you think I'm lying, no. Open the door. Cause tonight I cannot go hunting for stars, no, no.
Sebastiano Paul Lessi, born 1985 and better known by his stage name Sebalta, is a Swiss singer, fiddler and attorney who represented his country at the Eurovision Song Contest in 2014. Sebalta was born in the Italian-speaking canton of Ticino. Prior to Eurovision, he worked as a business lawyer, putting his law career on hold to focus on his music career.
As you do.
As you do, yes. From 2000 to 2002, Sebalta played the bass in a Swiss hard rock band called The Stalkers, who specialised in covers of early 70s groups such as Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin.
Yeah!
From 2002 to 2012, Sebalta played the fiddle in a Swiss folk rock band, The Vadvuk, where he released three albums with the band and toured extensively. He left the band in 2012 to pursue a solo career. In November 2013, Hunter of Stars was announced as one of the three entries from Italian-Swiss broadcaster RSI for the Swiss national selection. Later in the month, the song passed the expert Czech stage, progressing to the national final. In December, the song was released as a single. Sebalta and his band performed Hunter of Stars on the national final show, winning the selection. Hunter of Stars came 13th in the final on 64 points.
They actually made the final.
Yeah.
Now, this is the thing, too, when we were talking to, you know, our very loyal fans about Switzerland, of course, this one came up.
Oh,
everyone remembers this one because it's the whistling song.
Yeah.
And you know we love whistling songs.
Yes.
We're a sucker for whistling songs. This official clip is such fun.
Oh, it's one of
it
the
is
funnest
fun.
Clips.
Couple turn up at a hotel. Sebalta is the concierge. He has a bit of a sing. Manager tells him off and sends him to the kitchen, as you do. Then suddenly the band arrives, so they all bring out their instruments to sing and have
all,
a bit of...
All these cooks
all these cooks and our band members. But then, of course, some spaghetti goes flying and lands on the face of the manager. Then, of course, suddenly, obviously, they get downgraded to bellboys.
Yeah.
So they're now scooting around the hotel singing, you know, on one of those thingos, you know, what do you call them?
The things you put this
luggage
trolley, on.
A trolley. Then they basically just give up working entirely and hold a concert in the lounge, and then everyone gets up in their pyjamas and starts dancing around them, including the manager because he's clearly given up.
If you can't beat him, join him. Yeah. It was one of the funnest clips I've seen.
Really, really,
really good.
Fun.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, the Eurovision stage performance is still fun.
But
it's just a straight performance.
Yeah.
Like, there's none of that kind of cheeky element in it, of course, other than, you know, Eurovision likes a good violinist.
Yes.
And likes a cheeky violinist.
Yes.
And of course, he is both, and he is not the one from Norway. But basically, the staging is just yellow, it's them, and then we have pyro, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing much going on. But yeah, that official clip, if you haven't seen it, please look it up on YouTube.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Because it's really, really fun. And there is a bit where we kind of break the fourth wall too, because you said that the camera was in shot.
Yeah, that was in the official clip, yes. But that was on purpose, obviously, breaking
of course. the fourth wall.
Yeah.
I missed that bit.
Yeah.
I had my head down trying to
write like
stuff.
It was less than a second.
But it was like, hey, we're actually filming this.
Yeah.
Hello. Isn't that funny?
Oh.
No, that was so good. I can't believe it. That's episode 41.
Our 2-year anniversary episode is almost done.
Next episode will be based on whichever country we draw out of the Yoda Beanie of Doom, all countries with five songs or more from 2000 onwards get a turn. And we only have...
six left.
Six left. Can I have a drum roll, please? Yunala Sand, I hope you've had a bit of a break post-Eurovision, and thanks again for joining us in the booth. Could you just make sure that this is an official result? Thank you.
Yes, Danny. It looks like a valid result. Take it away.
You know, they say that 42 is the meaning of life.
Yes.
Could we find the meaning of life in Moldova?
I think we can.
I can't believe we've still got M's in there. I know. It's like, what? Moldova is going to be huge.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the guys with the cones on their
heads.
Oh,
yes.
Yes. And, of course, we've got Epic Sax Guy
Sunstroke
times
Project,
two.
Yep.
And, of course, this year's entry, which has grown on us so much.
I know. Everyone, including us, basically put it down the bottom, except probably a few others. But after their performance, which was amazing. Like, it came 10th. Dory Doss.
I never thought that threesomes would be so much fun. I'm so sheltered.
It's been one of those episodes,
listeners. It's been one of those episodes. You should hear the stuff that we've cut. Oh, wow. May I have the legal announcement? Thank you.
We at Wind Machine Podcast have taken every legal step allowed to us to present this podcast with a current APRA license, and we claim fair use for the music played. We are not affiliated with the EBU, its partners, or SBS. We are just fans.
Okay, what do you know about Moldova? Practically nothing. Pretty much.
What's their capital?
Fleur! Where are you, Fleur?
Oh, I've got a number. I could see it, but nah.
Well, that's why we do these podcast episodes.
Yeah.
Because we actually get to learn stuff. Other than a pretty cool flag, which for some reason I keep looking at it and thinking it's Andorra or an undressed Romania. Yeah, the flag's pretty cool. I'm going to look forward to doing looking into the flag for that one. But, yeah, well... I've been Danny Tregoning, and you can find me on Twitter, DanieTreg.
And I'm Mark Perkins. You can find me on Twitter at MarkPerkinsVO.
You can find the Twitter account of the podcast, Wind Machine Pod.
Like us on Facebook.
Yeah, that's kind of nice. Like us on Facebook.
Listen to us if you're not listening to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, and all the rest.
Podbean.
Yeah, listen to us somewhere there.
Somewhere. Tune in.
Oh, yeah, tune in, yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of them. It's ridiculous. We're really, you know, pushing ourselves everywhere, aren't we?
Yes.
We really are. And if you want to keep in touch with us or find older episodes, which, of course, haven't been uploaded or have either run out of steam on the other podcasting sites, you can go to our website, windmachinepodcast.com, and go through all of the, there's like an archive that we've got there of
all the episodes.
So you can go all the way back to number one if you want. No, please don't. It was terrible.
No, it's fine. It was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Oh my God. All right. Well, 2 weeks time.
Moldova.
Episode 42. Yippee. Ooh. Until then, listeners, thank you for listening.
Bye.
And bye-bye.
Bye.